Morena, and welcome to Sobriety Chat. I am your host, Lotta Dan, otherwise known as Mrs. D. I am the community manager and content creator here at Living Sober. And today I am joined by Kate Twigg. Now, Kate, it's a funny story how I'm here talking to Kate, but we'll get to that. Kate is a wife, she's a mother, she's a businesswoman, she's a wellness advocate, she's a cancer survivor or cancer thriver. And she is sober. Morning, Kate.
Good morning.
Now, the reason we're chatting is because I met your sister at the doctor's and she said, you should talk to my sister. And the minute I looked you up, I thought, yes, I need to talk to you because, I mean, number one, you're a sober hero and there's my favorite people to talk to. But two, you're just doing amazing work. You've been on a bit of a journey and you're doing amazing work raising awareness, I think, around some of the truths, should we say, of cancer. Yes. And the links with alcohol. So huge mihi to you and what you've been through. What can you share, I suppose, about what's been happening for you the past few years?
There's a lot been going on for me for the last 3 years. I've had two cancers. So initially I got diagnosed with breast cancer. And following on from that, 2 months later, I was in that 0.05% or 2% chance, I think it was, where you can get a treatment-related cancer from the treatment you've had from breast cancer. And so I was diagnosed with leukemia, and I was in hospital, I think, in total after a stem cell transplant for 3.5-4 months. I guess it's been 3-4 years of dealing with that. But alongside of all of that, I have also been dealing with giving up alcohol and becoming sober. It was actually the cancer that put that in the spotlight, really. I couldn't believe that even though I was having chemo and feeling rubbish, that I still felt like a drink. And that's rung alarm bells for me, really.
Okay, so let's just thank you for sharing that, and it's so lovely to see you looking so well and glowing and, you know, having come through what you've been through, because I can't even imagine, you know, 3 to 4 months in hospital and all of the uncertainty. So I'm really happy for you. Can we go back a little and just trace through your drinking history? Like, when did you start drinking? What was your habit like? How did that go for you through your life?
Yeah, so embarrassingly, I actually started drinking when I was probably 12 or 13. I've got three older sisters, so I suspect I was trying to follow in their footsteps. And I had a very good friend who lived around the road from me, and she also had three older brothers and sisters. And on the weekends, we used to go to each other's place, depending on whose parents were picking up the older kids from the party. And while the parents were picking up the older kids from the party, we would get into the drink, but not both of us, just one of us, because we knew that other person would be sick. So one of us would have to look after them and the other one had to fill in for that person for tennis. Isn't that crazy?
God, so organized. These little girls being so organized with their naughtiness.
I know, but you know, and that wasn't every weekend, but on the odd weekend that we did. And I do remember having situations where one time my friend drank the red, you know, drank red wine. And I had to call my sisters and be like, oh my God, she's vomiting blood. We hadn't actually put the two and two together. And
so young. So yeah. It was just the appeal of this fun thing that the older kids were doing. And of course, we live in a society where it's everywhere all the time. So you guys were just wanting to be a part of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's crazy to look back now and think that was how young I was.
I mean, usually I hear, and for me it was 15,
Yes.
Usually people say it's around that kind of age, but I have heard of people younger. So how did it go for you through your teen years and 20s? Were you kind of a regular drinker? Was it a part of your life? Were you enthusiastic? How was your habit?
Yes, definitely. I was the life of the party. I loved a good social event. At college, definitely. Also, all through college, I remember turning up to boarding school. I was a year late. I was in fourth form, and well, you don't call it fourth form now, but year 10. And I remember saying to friends of mine, it was the year 10 dance or whatever it was, and I remember asking people, "Oh, how do we get alcohol?" And they were all looking at me as if, "What are you talking about?" And yeah, I guess it just escalated. It just kept growing, and it was always part of my life. I was nicknamed PP, Party Pants, because I loved a good party, and I didn't have an off switch, so that was my problem. I was able to regulate my drinking in terms of just leaving it till Wednesday till Saturday or Wednesday till Sunday. But any kind of social event, any kind of inkling of somebody just thinking maybe pouring another one or it going a little bit harder, I was there. No questions asked. Whether I drove or not, I'll pick up the car in the morning. I was always making those excuses inside my head. So I think it was just always part of my life, and it was part of who I was. And I never imagined not drinking. Crazy. And I look back and I think, even all the memes that I sent through lockdown and all of those kind of things, I think at one stage I taped my hands up with wine bottles as a joke. We didn't actually do it, but that's what we did back at school. Like, I think of that now, where you lock yourself in a room with two bottles of wine taped to your hands, and you're not allowed until you drink them. It was like this, I can't remember the name of it.
Like an initiation.
Yeah, like at uni or just after uni. So
I
people
hadn't
would.
even heard that. So you'd have two a wine bottle
You'd
taped to
have.
your.
And you weren't allowed, and you'd all get locked in different rooms, and then you'd have to come out after drinking them.
Oh my God, two bottles. That's a binge and a half.
That's
So did
crazy.
you? Did you ha ever have any? So lockdown, you were sending memes and being kind of. So that wasn't that long ago. So at that time, were you having any kind of internal dialogue? Was there any little voice in there, like if you woke up hungover, or was there any niggling thought of, is this okay, or were you just fully in it and enthusiastic and happy?
A little, mostly fully in it, enthusiastic and happy. So my life was great. I didn't have any issues or problems. I wasn't at a living a rock bottom life or anything like that. I was happy. I was having fun. I thought that was just part of having fun was the drinking. But there was, now that I look back, and there were definitely little alarm bells there saying, this is probably too much. And I guess as the kids were getting a little bit older, like we could put them to bed and then do whatever we wanted to do afterwards. But I actually never wanted to be that parent who was drunk around my kids. And because they were staying up later and that kind of thing, I guess I did have in the back of my head, or there were times that I was like, oh, I don't want that to be part of my life or my kids' life. A good
Right.
friend said she
Interesting.
was, yeah, she that I had talked to her about that as well before I got cancer, because we had a house out, a holiday house, and I was then in the drinking crept up a little bit earlier during the days during the festive period, and so our kids were all seeing that, yeah, and I guess I didn't really enjoy that. But at
Interesting.
no point did I think I could stop.
No, because who doesn't drink? I mean, I think what you're articulating so brilliantly is the impact of the normalization of alcohol in our society, where we think there needs to be a really clear outward marker of it being a problem for it to be a problem. And so you're saying everything was great. My life was good. I was, you were obviously in a good relationship. You were happy, you know, things were going well and that alcohol was just a part of it. So why would you not? And what's the problem? But part of that just speaks to, it's so normalized, that that kind of boozy behavior, that it's, unless there's a really obvious sign that things are wrong, we just accept that it's all normal. And yeah, really interesting that it was the, not like there was a part of you that was just thinking, yeah, but I don't know that I want my kids to be seeing this the older they get. That that was the niggly awareness in the back of your mind. But that awareness is fighting with what we're presented with, which is, this is normal way to live.
Deep down, I know that I didn't do stuff. Like I nearly started a business, an event business. I now know, having stopped drinking, that I never went through with that because I was drinking, because I knew that if I started an event, that would be event business. That would be my weekends gone. So I never did it. And I made up some other excuses to why I didn't do it. Oh, it was the kids and wanting to spend time. That wasn't it. Well, I reckon it stopped me from, because I can be quite creative and I like ideas and I would love to have started a business earlier, but I actually feel like it has stopped me from doing that earlier.
Mm. Well, but you just couldn't imagine, because like we say, who lives without alcohol? Okay, I want to get to what you've realised now that you're not drinking, because I'm fascinated now that you've got this benefit of, wow, I'm actually living this life and seeing what it's like. But first, how did it go? So then you were obviously diagnosed, you got unwell, you were noticing, you said that you were still wanting to have a drink even though you were going through chemo. So how did the actual, how did you get to that point of giving up, and explain how that went for you?
So that was interesting because, yeah, I obviously had that feeling of wanting to have a drink, not admittedly when I was going through the really rough big chemo, but when I was going through the chemo that, you know, was kind of awful, but not as bad as the other one. And I thought, gosh, I'm still wanting a drink at 5 p.m. This is really strange. And so during that breast cancer treatment, I think at the end of it, I said, I gave myself a rule of no more than 2 drinks ever. So I did that for a little bit. And then I got diagnosed with the leukemia. And I now say, I firmly believe that somebody sent me another one because they said, you're just going to go straight back to your old habits. Unless I give you something else that's going to make you become the person that you need to be, the authentic Kate, then, you know, here's another one. You're just going to have to work your way through it. And obviously, then I went, what's the point? Like, I want to be alive. I know that alcohol's bad for me. I know that it's a poison. I know that it's not great for cancer. Why would I drink it?
When did that sort of awareness come?
It came, sorry, that's my phone.
That's okay. We can if you can, we can.
Okay. When did I realize, did you say? It was probably, yeah. Oh, I mean, the I'm gonna have to get it because it's an alarm.
Okay.
Sorry.
Unscheduled break.
Sorry, I'm back.
These things happen. I just was drinking my tea.
So I realized, well, then I got the leukemia, which was just, you know, there was no way that I was drinking through any of that. That treatment for that was full on, full noise. I was in and out of hospital constantly. So I guess in some ways I was kind of pushed into it, but I knew at that point that I would never go back.
Yeah. So interesting, isn't it, that you see it now almost as someone going, this woman really needs to get the message. We're going to ram her so that her eyes open and And now you're through the other side, and like I said, it's just so great seeing you here looking so well and being well and moving on with your life. And I'm just so happy for you because it must have been really terrifying at stages. I can't even imagine for you and your family. But tell us how it's going now. I mean, how long since you've had a drink, and what have you learned?
No, it's so funny because I don't actually count how long it's been since I've had a drink. So it's roughly a couple of years. I'm that hypocrite, that one that, I don't know, like I just feel I've gone from one extreme to the other extreme, because now I just really want to get it out there and tell people, like, this causes seven different types of cancer. This is the reason why you've probably got chronic inflammation or terrible perimenopause or whatever. I look at people and I think they say, oh, I'm really struggling with this and this and this, and then they're drinking all the time. I can really see the how that affects our bodies in so many different ways. And so, yeah, I feel better than what I did before I had cancer. So I struggled with autoimmune diseases and all sorts of things prior to getting cancer, and I'm sure a lot of it was exaggerated and not helped by my drinking. And then now, yeah, I just feel like I've got so much more time, because that inner dialogue, you have no idea how much space that takes up of, oh great, I'm going to have a drink. Oh, do we need any alcohol? Oh, we've got to get this. Oh, and the social side of my life has disappeared, but I'm actually fine with that, because I'm becoming who I authentically am, not someone who what was a party person because I drank alcohol. I don't know. Yeah.
Oh my God, I relate to so much of what you're saying. I mean, God, my husband and I, we used to have this thing where it was like a shorthand heading for the week, Friday. Have we got enough was the question. And we knew what that meant. Have we got enough alcohol? And, it was just this, you don't realize the focus and the time and the energy it takes until all it's gone. And, it's like you've slowly, developed a habit over time where you almost don't see it because it's become such a normal part of life. And I just love what you're saying now about, having flipped, because it's like you've exited the matrix and you've gone, wait, this is crazy. What the? And then you start looking at society and go, it's in the supermarket. This is a toxic, addictive, carcinogenic drug. And we give it to people when they buy a house. We offer it to them when they get their hair cut. If you can
And the
take it into.
one, sorry, the one I'm struggling with is the sports things. Like we use it as raffles, we use it as all sorts of stuff for sport, and it just, and for our kids, and it just doesn't really
I
fit
know.
me anymore. One of the biggest things I reckon for me, though, and I want people to really know, is that I feel like when you give up alcohol, you have to be willing to do some work on yourself, because you can't use willpower alone. You have to understand why you actually ended up drinking, and then kind of work through a lot of your ways, I think. I mean, for me, it was people pleasing, and yeah, lots of other stuff, but I've had to work really hard. Sorry, I've just really flipped what you were saying before, but
I am here for it. Keep going.
yeah, I think you have to be really willing to work on yourself and to have those uncomfortable moments, and to just sit with those uncomfortable moments and be with them and work out why do I feel like a drink now? The only time I get little pangs now is if there's a celebration, which I find quite interesting. So if I want to celebrate something, I get a little thing of, oh, I'd like to pop open a bottle of bubbles now. But other than that, I don't think about it at all.
So it was PP, you said, wasn't it? Is that
Yeah,
your name?
pardon.
So party pants, there was more going on than just party pants. Is that what you're saying? There was other stuff that the alcohol was standing in the way of you sort of acknowledging or working on. It was deeper than just wanting to be a fun time girl.
I think it always is. Yeah, yeah, definitely. But nothing that I would have gone, oh, I really need to sort that out. It's just bubbled to the surface because I've stopped. And now I can see it more. And now I can go, oh, wow, I didn't realize I was that or that happened. I also have just recently been diagnosed, like a lot of people, with ADHD, although not confirmed, but my doctor did say, I could have told you ages ago you have ADHD, Kate. And I look back now and think, gosh, that's why I chased that dopamine hit. That's why I was always trying to have more. And yeah, I feel like that's quite a big part of it too.
Yeah, and you might never have actually got to that if you'd just continued on that path. And with the people pleasing, I'm interested in this because, hello, how are you going with boundaries? Because it's quite hard, I find.
It is very hard, and you find yourself slipping back into that same mold. And actually, because I'm a real I just love to do stuff and help people and whatever else. So yeah, actually my husband said to me the other day, do not tell anybody else that you can do anything at the moment. But I also feel like now that I've got all this time, I'm like, oh, but I can do that because I feel so good. Every single morning that I get up, I feel great compared to what I did feel like. I think you don't realize how much you were running on 50% until you actually step out of it and go, wow, it's amazing to feel like this every single day.
Yeah, it's so true. Oh my God, I'm so happy for, I'm not happy with what you went through, but I'm so happy for you that you've got to this place where you're just, it's like, it's a joy. I mean, sobriety, and especially early on for people, it's hard because you have to learn to sit with the discomfort, and you have to learn to be the, let go of that party person in a way, not fully, but to some extent. And you have to, there's so much going on early on, but we always keep saying to people in our community, keep going, because the positives start emerging, and some of them take a while, but overall it is just such a much better way of being. And I loved what you said earlier about becoming who you authentically are. It's a cliched word, but it's just so true.
Yeah, it is really true. And then learning, like, oh, what did I like before I was 12? Almost. What were the things that I was into? So recently I have just started, I learned to row because I was always like, oh, I really wanted to do that, but I didn't. And so I think going back to, oh, I want to join a choir because I love being in a choir. Like all the things that I would never do if I was still drinking because I wouldn't have time to do them. That was because I was filling up my social calendar with all the things that I could do to be able to have a few drinks.
Yeah. And so socially, you mentioned things have changed. You probably have some party people that you used to see more. Has it been a hard transition socially to
Yeah.
not be a part of that anymore? Because I know that's the reality for a lot of people, that they're going to lose their friends in a way. And it's not that the friends are horrible, it's just that
No.
they're still drinking and you're not, and it can be tricky.
And I get it. Like, I totally understand. I was that person. I wouldn't have invited anybody that didn't want to drink to my social function. Why would I do that? They weren't going to be on the same wavelength as me. So I get it. But yeah, it's also hard because you think, oh, but I'm still the same person. I can still come and like hang out and not drink. And that won't matter for me, but it
Yeah.
matters for them. And so I think, yeah, you definitely lose a few social function invites. And we don't entertain like we used to, my husband and I, but I don't know, because things change in your what you want to do, what you see as important changes. You don't worry. It doesn't worry me. So,
Yeah, me either. And I always like to think when I'm on a Friday night and I'm doing something like it's so geeky, but I might be, doing a jigsaw puzzle with my laptop there, watching reality TV and having a cup of tea. And I like to think that there's actually so many people having cozy, geeky Friday nights. We always think there's everyone else is out there partying, but no, there's a
no.
lot of us who are doing that other stuff.
Yeah, and the big one for me is I just would just be like, oh, but I'm going to wake up feeling amazing and can fit so much
Yes.
in my day the next day that I'm not, I mean, we had times when my husband would be like, you go, no, you go, you take the kids, no, you take the kids, to sport the next day because we'd both be feeling a bit rubbish, and generally me. I don't really understand how you can feel so rubbish and then still want to do it again. Like, that's how addictive I feel like alcohol is. The fact that you can be so rubbish and even the next day go, oh no, I'll do it all again.
Yeah, well, it's addictive, but also it works. We'd be stupid if we said the drug works. The minute you have that drink and you get that hit, you get that release, it works on your brain chemistry, and that's the thing that keeps pulling you back. Because in the moment it does what you want, but it's the impact of it when you really look at it that's outweigh far the negatives outweigh that first initial. Yeah. So, I really want to ask where you're at now because I know you've got sort of exciting things happening. I've been cyber stalking you on your Instagram. And you and your husband have got fun ventures and it's like you're really bringing your lived experience of what you've been through into fun, offerings for other people. What can you sort of tell us about that?
Yeah, so we've just, my husband and I, and interestingly, he didn't come on this journey with me initially, but he has now. And that's not to say he hasn't completely stopped, but generally he wouldn't have a drink, and that's massive for us and for him. So that's been amazing. But we have started a business called O Studio, which is a wellness business. So when I was going through all of my cancer stuff, I really wanted to find something that helped others because that's what I love doing. And I was also looking for places to go to have a sauna and, to ice baths and all of that kind of stuff. So that popped up. And yeah, we've just recently signed a lease for a place in Blair Street in Wellington.
It's so exciting, and I will be visiting for saunas, but there ain't no way I'm getting in an ice bath.
Oh, I'll
I
get you
understand. People say it's amazing. I get it, but I just cannot with the cold water.
in. You can. Do you know what it is? It's your breath work.
Breath
So
work.
if you get your breathing any in control, anybody can go in it because
I just
ice
don't want to
water.
be cold.
No, but you don't feel it like that because you've got your breath work. So you know how you sort of get in and you do that. And
Yeah.
so you don't do that. So you never get that kind of I'm really cold. It is incredible. I'll get you in there, don't you worry.
Okay. I'm actually game because I see it and I've always thought there's something there, but I'm never going to experience. But maybe I'll push myself out of my comfort zone. All right, Kate, I'm going to follow up on that. When are you open?
We're not open till June and next year,
Okay.
but
All good.
yeah, we will be doing some sort of events and things on the way. So maybe I'll get you down to one of those.
Oh, awesome. All right. Well, I didn't mean for this to turn into a giant advert, but I did just want to talk about what you're doing because I think it illustrates as well. You said there were businesses in the past that could have happened that didn't, and you've been through this incredibly gritty time, and you've done this amazing work of quitting alcohol, which is heroic. I mean, not overstating it, it really is. And now look where you are, and you're just doing beautiful stuff. And I'm so happy for you, really. And I'm so grateful for you coming and chatting with me about all of this because I think that there's a woeful lack of knowledge around the links between alcohol and cancer. And that's partly because of the, you know, the liquor industry does a really good job of muddying the waters around the science. And also that knowledge sits at odds with the way this drug is positioned in our society. Like your brain goes, well, if it's so bad, why isn't it in the supermarket? Like those things don't marry. So any, I'm always keen for any kōrero around that. And so I'm grateful for you bringing that to life as well.
Thank you very much for having me. And yeah, I hope that anybody listening to this, just keep at it, keep going. It becomes a non-event in your life eventually. And you just got to sit with those uncomfortable moments to kind of get there, I guess.
Perfect. Mic drop. Okay, over and out. Thank you, Kate.
Thanks, Lotta. See you.